This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Listening to specific testimony right now in the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. We're going to now go to FBI Special Agent Steve Daniels as he revealed shocking new details in the Lori Vallow Daybell trial this week. Let's take a listen.
Agent Daniels, when we left off yesterday, I believe we had spoken about in this exhibit the house, the fire pit, Tylee's burial site, and the garage and shed. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And I call your attention to the north portion of the map. What's labeled as Site 1?
Site 1 was what we called burial site number 1, and that becomes the burial site for J.J. Vallow.
Okay. And I believe we may have already started this, but if you could just briefly remind the jury what we're looking at here.
This was just what I would call an overall photo leading toward what became burial site number 1. And burial site number 1 ends up being in the vicinity of where that laser pointer is. And this is just kind of a showing you an overall of what the vegetation looked like, the higher level vegetation in that area, and then we'll gradually get closer to the site.
Just 1 second, Your Honor. Can you briefly describe what's in photograph 149?
This is just a photograph as we get closer now to burial site number 1. And this is the actual burial site here. So you can see the thicker vegetation, higher vegetation around the burial site. And then the actual burial site has the thinner layer of vegetation on top. And then when you're there in person, you can see that it was actually a little raised berm that was the actual burial site.
Okay. And I believe that we covered this photo yesterday and in this photo.
Correct.
And just to refresh everyone's memory, was this the preparation site or preparation of site 1?
Correct. And this was just kind of once we decide this looks like it could be a good burial. Our process for these burials, and JJ's burial was the first burial that we located on the property on June 9th. So our process, what we want to do when we process these burials or potential burials at this point, is we just want to kind of establish a perimeter for what we think that burial, where that burial is, and then we just want to start excavating or digging down. And anything that becomes significant as we're digging down, the team leader will just make a determination. Okay, that looks pretty significant. Let's stop. Let's take photographs. Let's take some FARO scans of that layer just to document that for later, to try to tell the story of how these remains were buried. Whoever the suspect or suspects were that buried these human remains, we just want to show that story down the road, like a circumstance like this, to a jury. And so layer by layer, first we're taking that vegetation off, this potential burial.
Your Honor, I'm going to object. There needs to be questions before we...
I'll sustain. It is just a narrative. Okay. And I'd ask Mr. Wood and the witness, it does need to be an exchange of question and answer.
Okay, thank you. Agent, I believe we saw this photo yesterday, but if you could just briefly summarize again, just to refresh the jury's memory, what we're looking at in photo 173.
So after we've removed that vegetation off the top, this is the next significant layer. So now the vegetation's gone, and now we can see those rocks that were protruding through the ground. And what's interesting now is just the precise way that these rocks are laid out. You can start to see the cut roots around this grave, especially the bigger roots. So somebody's taken time and effort to cut through these roots. and then you can start to see some board.
Agent, to clarify, when you say someone has taken time to cut those roots, was it your team that cut those roots, or were they already cut?
They were already cut, so our team did not cut these roots. So this is just how we found these roots in this grave or burial site number one, as we called it at this time. And when we were there at this stage, we didn't know if this was burial site number one or if there would be human remains here. But this was a very good indication that somebody in this part of the field or property had deliberately placed these rocks that shouldn't belong there in this precise manner. So it's a good indication that this is a burial at this time.
And what did you observe in photo 181?
So once the stones and rocks were removed from that last layer, this was the next layer. So underneath those stones, rock, there's two planks that were observed. And so that was a good point to stop, take more photos, and do some scans. And again, you can just see the same tree roots keep becoming exposed.
Detective, agent, you've described these boards and these rocks. Have you had, through your work with ERT, multiple experiences discovering and uncovering clandestine graves?
Yes. So through my experience, I've probably excavated approximately 5 to 7 burials. Out of all of those burials, this is the most precise. Somebody's taken the most effort to bury these remains. And what I mean by that is I haven't seen it.
Oh, here, let me ask the question. Sorry. Agent, from your experience, you talked about the deliberateness of those items placed there. Was there anything else significant or that stuck out to you about those items being placed there?
So by placing these planks and rocks, a couple of things stuck out to me, and that would be you would do that in order to prevent wildlife potentially from getting to your human remains. So if wildlife got to the human remains, they could then scatter those human remains. And if they scattered the human remains, then obviously a neighbor or somebody else could find those human remains, so then the grave's not as hidden as these people, person, would like them to be. Also, I had already described how this grave was found. There was like a raised berm. When human remains decompose, that usually means that if it had been level, there would be like a sinking of the soil once the human remains decompose. So somebody's put some thought into if the human remains decompose and there is like a sinking of that top layer, if there's a berm to it, then that will kind of level out over time. So in my experience tells me somebody's put some thought into preventing wildlife from getting to the human remains and also thinking about once those human remains decompose, not having such a depression in the soil from above. So trying to keep the remains hidden.
Thank you. Agent, can you describe what we see in photo 183?
So now we've removed the planks and the teams continue to excavate further into the grave. And now we can see a black piece of plastic that starts to be exposed.
And can you describe what we see in photograph 190?
And it's at this point is when I get into the burial and I take my hands and I just kind of brush aside the soil from the black plastic. So I just kind of make an oval shape in the ground. And that has the fill of a human skull. And that's what I presume it is. And at that point, I take a razor blade, because we need to determine, at this point we still don't know for sure if this is a burial and those are human remains. So we have to make that determination. So I take a razor blade and I cut into this black plastic bag. And that black plastic bag, as you can tell, it's tight, sucked tight to whatever's inside. So I had to pull that black plastic bag off whatever was inside, and then I make a razor blade cut to that black plastic bag, trying not to disturb any forensic evidence that might be on it.
Agent, can you describe what you see in photo 191?
So underneath that black plastic bag, once it was cut open, ends up being this white plastic bag. And so I kind of do the same thing, kind of pull that white plastic bag away from what ends up being the skull, the head of the human remains. And I do the same thing. I make a razor blade cut to that white plastic bag. And as I'm doing that cut, you can see kind of the human hair starts coming out, you know, with that razor blade into my hands. And that's the point that we decide this is human remains. And so that, at that point, is when that absolutely becomes burial site number one, and that ends up becoming JJ's burial site.
And can you describe what you see in photograph 192?
This is just a better picture showing the hair that came off with the razor blade. You can see the cut that was made to the white plastic, and then you can also see some duct tape that was also inside those plastic bags.
Can you describe photograph 195?
And then from that point, we know we have the human remains. This is a burial. So now the team just needs to continue excavation of the entire burial site so that we can remove the remains. Same process, just continue to excavate down until we can see the entire remains. Maybe there's other evidence in here also. So we're in this site, we talked about it before, the other sites, but we did have a sifting operation happening at this site too. We divided this grave in half. So the top with the head was grid A, and the side with the feet was grid B. So we kind of sifted both areas, the dirt that was inside, just in case there was other evidence there. And in grid A, we had like a charcoal piece. We had a charcoal piece in B, and there's a plastic piece found in grid A. So there's other things being done too with these within the burial.
You can describe what's in photo 200.
The team's just continue to excavate, so we're just getting a little bit deeper. You know, we're getting further down in that excavation process. And then you can just kind of see that, you know, the roots are still there, so just things are showing up better.
And what kind of tools was your team using at this point?
So when we do these burials, we have, there's multiple tools depending on how far away you are from the human remains. We can use, when we're further away from the human remains, we can use shovels, rakes to maybe get through some of those upper layers. As we get closer to the human remains, depending on what they're inside of or wrapped in, we can use those trowels that I talked about before, which are metal. When we get closer to human remains, and these ones are wrapped, so it just kind of depends on who's excavating and what the soil's like. Soils are all different. But we have metal trowels. They're hand tools that you can hold, and they're kind of angular at the top. We have wooden tools. So we like to use, if we get closer to flesh or organic material, we have wooden tools. We have clay molding tools. So they're just a little different shapes. So if you get closer to skin, closer to flesh, then sometimes those clay-type tools are useful. Or tongue depressors. Everybody knows what a tongue depressor is. Those are really good tools if you get closer to skeletal remains, so you're not damaging skeletal remains. So anyway, we have a wide variety of tools we can use. So it just depends on what we're facing in these different burials.
Can you describe what you see in photograph 204?
This is just kind of the continuation of the same process. It's a slow, methodical process. If you've ever done one of these, or we just take our time and we go slow, because we don't want, you can see, start seeing duct tape on the black plastic bag. And for forensic people, duct tape has really good evidence on it. So we go slow and methodical because we don't know what we're going to find, like the duct tape. So we try to preserve that. We don't want to hurt it. And we don't know what else we're going to find. So we just kind of go really slow, trying to find those key things and preserve those. So we just keep going down, and maybe that duct tape, something just every so often we'll just, again, it's the team leader's discretion when we stop, take photographs, and just try to, so when we're at this stage, just try to have these photos for everybody to review later.
Okay. And can you tell us what you see in photograph 209?
So now we're pretty much complete with the excavation of the human remains. And now we're ready to remove those remains.
And what do you see in photo 215?
So once those remains were removed, provided to the coroner, this just shows that there was decomposition that was leaking out of those plastic bags and has been left inside the burial. And then we did take samples of that decomposition. And then this
and
is
what do you see in photo 217?
This is just a close-up of that decomposition that remained inside the burial.
Can you describe what you see in photograph 240?
This is just showing some of those pieces of evidence or the rocks that were on top of the burial, that first one of the first layers, and then the planks that were on top of the burial. So some of those first layers that we had removed and then later took as evidence. And then all of the evidence from this burial was provided to the Rexburg Police Department, and then the human remains were provided to the coroner.
And can you describe what we see in photo 268?
And then this was the first, again, this was the first burial that we found on the property. And so at this time, it was really important that we went deeper after we found the remains, and we went wider after we found the remains, because at this time, we weren't positive. We were still looking for Tylee's remains. So now that we had found JJ's, we knew, hey, Tylee's around here somewhere. So it was super important that we use the tractor. Is Tylee buried underneath JJ? Is she somewhere in this vicinity? So we just had to use that tractor to try to see if Tylee was in the same area. So this was kind of the first time we used the backhoe to just kind of expand a little bit around where JJ was, just in case.
And did you find anything else in burial site one?
We did not.
Agent, we've spoken about feral scan data. Was the feral scanner used at burial site one?
It was.
You spoke earlier about it being at the site supervisor's discretion as to when to run the scanner. As the site supervisor, can you just explain a little further what are the types of things that would lead you to have the feral scanner run?
Just these, for a burial, anything significant found while you're doing the excavation. So key pieces of evidence. In this case, you see a layer of rocks that are over a burial. You see the layer of planks over a burial. You know, when a black plastic bag shows up that could be the head. You know, that's those key things. You want to try to capture those, whether it's photos, scans. There's multiple ways to capture those things. In this case, we chose to do the photos and the scans with the feral scanner.
Okay. So I'm going to show you what's been labeled layer A. And at this point, is there an approximate depth given?
Yes. So this is just the photograph showing those rocks on the top on this layer. And then the lowest point of this layer, the approximate depth is listed in this lower diagram.
And in layer B?
So the lowest depth of the excavation from this photograph is just highlighted right here with that line. And again, you have in the diagram just from 1 foot, 2 foot, 3 foot.
And layer C?
And that depth is just kind of noted. The lowest depth from that picture is just kind of highlighted right there with C.
And what do you describe? What can you describe for layer D?
Just from this photograph where we were at that time, the lowest depth that was scanned was right there, so just under a foot.
And finally, in layer E.
So this is when that excavation was complete. We were ready to remove the remains. And then the lowest layer scan depth at that, when that picture was taken, was just above 2 feet.
Your Honor, at this time I'm going to ask that the witness be handed what's been marked as Exhibits 170A through 170U. And I would, well, wait till he sees them. And the copy has been provided to counsel in the court. Agent, can you briefly review what's been provided to you in 170A through 170U and let me know when you've had a chance to review it? Do you recognize that exhibit?
Yes.
What does it purport to be?
It looks like our ERT photos that were taken June 9th and June 10th.
And are those, so are they the same photos that were used in your exhibit?
Interactive, yes.
And are those true and accurate representations of what you observed on June 9th and 10th?
Yes.
Your Honor, the state moves for admission of State's Exhibits 170A through 170U into evidence.
Any objection?
Your Honor, may I voir dire in aid of this objection?
Yes.
Agent Daniels, these photographs each one of these photographs that are in this packet are also photographs that have been shown to you in this particular exhibit, is that correct? In the exhibit, that the PowerPoint exhibit?
Correct.
Okay. You know, my objection would be that it's cumulative evidence and that it's just not needed.
All right, response, Mr. Wood.
Thank you, Your Honor. The reason the state is putting these into evidence is for ease of the jury in reviewing the evidence. Where this exhibit is interactive, and they may not be familiar with it, it's just a simple paper copy of the pictures. So it's just simply for the ease of the jury.
All right. Well, I would note that Exhibit 171, which is the interactive exhibit, does have these photographs already within it. There's an objection made that it's cumulative. I am considering that objection because the photographs are essentially all being proposed to be admitted two times, same photographs. However, given the nature of the different format and having considered whether or not there'd be any undue prejudice to have the paper copies of certain photographs, so find that it's not cumulative and it may assist the jury, would not be overly prejudicial, so I'll allow for the admission of exhibits 170A through 170U to be admitted.
Then I next ask that the witness be handed State's Exhibit 170V through 170QQ. Agent, can you review State's Exhibits 170V through 170QQ and let me know when you've had a chance to review them?
Yes. Okay, I've reviewed them.
What is State's Exhibits 170V through 170QQ?
They're photos that were in the interactive and photos that the ERT photographers took from the June 9th and 10th crime scene.
Okay, and do you recognize those photographs?
Yes.
And are they true and accurate representations of what you witnessed on June 9th and 10th?
Yes.
Your Honor, for the ease of the jury, the state moves for admission of State's Exhibits 170V through 170QQ.
Any objection from the defense?
Yes, Your Honor, we would renew our objection that these are cumulative.
Okay. I've considered that objection. Again, it is more than one version of the same photograph being admitted. The court does find, upon weighing it out, that it would not be unduly prejudicial to have the jurors have an easier reference of these particular photos, which are also found in the interactive exhibit. So the court will overrule the cumulative objection. The photographs on those exhibits are admitted, and just so the record's clear, that would be V through Z, and then they start again with AA, and then go sequentially AA, BB, etc., up through QQ. So those are the photographs that are now admitted.
And then if this witness could be handed State's Exhibit 170RR through 170XX. Oh.
Looks like there's two copies, is that right?
Yeah, I accidentally handed you my copy as well.
Okay.
Agent, can you review State's Exhibits 170RR through 170XX?
Yes.
Agent, what is State's Exhibit 170RR through 170XX?
They're photographs from the interactive.
Okay. And what portion of the interactive exhibit are they the photographs of?
They're from the house.
Okay. And are they true and accurate representations of what you observed and witnessed on June 9th and June 10th of 2020?
Yes, they are.
Your Honor, the state moves for admission into evidence of 170RR and through 170XX.
Any objection from the defense?
Your Honor, the defense would object to these being cumulative.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thomas. The court's again considered that objection. While these photographs are already incorporated into the interactive exhibit, I determine that they may be an alternative way for the jurors to more easily access the photographs and would not be unduly prejudicial. So I'll overrule the cumulative objection and allow for the admission of exhibits RR sequentially through XX.
And then if the witness could be handed what's been marked as State's Exhibits 170YY through 170JJJ. 170YY through 170JJJ. Agent, can you review State's Exhibits 170YY through 170JJJ and let me know when you've had a chance to look at them? Agent, what is in State's Exhibit 170YY through 170JJJ?
Photographs from the interactive.
Okay. What portion of the interactive are they photographs of?
Photographs from the fire pit.
Okay. And are they true and accurate representations of what you observed and witnessed on June 9th and 10th of 2020?
Yes.
Your Honor, the state moves for to enter State's Exhibits 170YY through 170JJJ into evidence.
Any objection?
Yes, Your Honor. Same objection. We would object to it being cumulative.
Very well. The court's considered that cumulative objection for the same reasons I've indicated in the previous three rulings as to the nature of these photographs in relation to the interactive exhibit. I'll incorporate that same rationale and overrule the objection. So to be clear on the record, then, exhibit YY and ZZ are admitted, and then it begins with AAA and goes sequentially through JJJ, and that packet of photos is admitted over the objection.
And then if the witness could be handed State's Exhibit 170KKK through 170WWW. Agent, can you review State's Exhibits 170KKK through 170WWW and let me know when you've had a chance to look over them?
Yes.
Agent, what have you had a chance to review State's Exhibits 170KKK through 170WWW?
Yes.
What do they purport to be?
Photographs from the interactive.
Okay. And they're the same photographs you used in your interactive?
Correct.
And which portion of the interactive are they photographs of?
They're photographs of the garage or barn.
Okay. And are they true and accurate representations of what you witnessed on June 9th and 10th, 2020?
Yes.
Your Honor, the state moves for admission of State's Exhibits 170KKK through 170WWW into evidence.
Any objection?
Yes, Your Honor, we would object to them being cumulative evidence.
All right, court's considered that objection as to this set of photographs, and I'll overrule the objection for the same rationale previously stated as how these photographs relate to the interactive exhibit that was admitted. So for that same rationale, the court overrules the cumulative objection, and exhibits KKK through WWW sequentially have been admitted.
Thank you. Just one moment, Your Honor. Agent, can you, based on the testimony you've given and your experience and training, to you, what were the differences or the contrast between the gravesite of Tylee Ryan and J.J. Vallow?
I thought there was a big difference between J.J.'s burial, which was our first burial that we uncovered that we just talked about, where the stones were covered in such a precise way, and the planks were there, and J.J.'s human remains were all intact, wrapped in the plastic bags, and then the white bag at least was on his skull from what we saw, versus burial site 2, where we at first couldn't even tell they were human remains. And then the way we found Tylee's remains, just kind of that mass of organic material at first. We didn't know what that was until we kind of pedestaled out that mass, went to uncover it, and it fell apart into pieces. Saw the burned, charred remains of Tylee's remains. So just such a big contrast for us as a team, going from JJ's, how precise everything was placed, the stones, the planks, the wrapping of the body, all intact, versus Tylee's melted, charred mass, how that was placed in that burial. The items we found in the fire pit, you know, and at the time we didn't know, you know, as an evidence team, we didn't know the connections, if any, but just all those evidence items that we found, but just a huge difference. So,
okay.
I think that's the best way to describe it from my standpoint, being ERT that day.
At this time, the state has no further questions, Your Honor.
All right, thank you, Mr. Wood. Mr. Thomas, will you be conducting cross?
Yes, Your Honor. How you doing today, Agent?
Good, thank you, sir.
Good. You indicated that that you've been on the ERT team for somewhere between about 13 years, is that right?
I'm saying 13 to 15 years. I was off and on.
Okay. And during that time, you've been to 5 to 7 covered burials, is that right?
That's a good approximate. Yeah, that's a good approximate.
Sorry, I didn't mean to talk over him.
Yeah, let's make sure we don't get into that with the court reporter keeping the record, so please don't talk at the same time.
So 5 to 7 burials over the past 13 to 15 years?
I was on and off ERT, so I would say over the last 12 years, approximately 5 to 7 burials.
Okay. And where were those burials? Were they all in Idaho?
I've always been in the Salt Lake City Division, which covers Utah, Idaho, and Montana.
Okay. And where was your first uncovery of a burial?
I'd have to look that up.
You don't recall?
I don't remember.
Okay. Would you consider this 2 separate burials, or would you consider this particular case 1 burial?
I would consider this 2 separate burials, mainly because of the contrast that I just described.
Okay. So I guess what I'm asking is, when you say 5 to 7 burials, are you saying 5 to 7 different events or 5 to 7 sites that you, or like, I don't know, how would you describe it?
I would say some of those burials were in the same burial, and some of them were individual in one burial.
Okay. So how many sites, like how many times have you gone out and done a burial uncovery over the course of your career?
I'd say approximately 5 times.
Okay. So
I'd have to review a bunch of reports in order to give you very specific details.
All right. Have you ever done a burial in Idaho?
Yes.
Okay. Other than this one, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I believe so. I believe so. I'd need to check, though, just to be sure.
Where would it be?
Probably on the Fort Hall Indian Reservation.
Okay. And what about, you indicated that your coverage area was Utah, Idaho, and Montana?
Correct.
Okay. Where in Montana would you have gone for a burial uncovery?
We recently were in, well, I probably shouldn't say the place. I probably shouldn't talk about specific cases.
Well, it kind of goes to your credibility as to, you know, you seem to have a little bit of knowledge recall issues. And
how about I just say near Missoula, Montana?
Okay.
I've been on call outs near, let's say, Moscow, Idaho.
Okay.
And a lot of those involve fire pits. So I've done multiple fire pit excavations, and that's excavating human remains from fire pits.
Okay. And there was a fire pit in this particular excavation?
Correct. That's why I think those are important to mention.
Okay. All right. And so when you do these, you mentioned how you kind of made it sort of a grid, right?
Correct.
All right. And on the grid of the fire pit, it wasn't like exact squared off. We're going to do 3-foot by 3-foot grids, right? And we're going to sift everything in that 3-foot section, and then we're going to move to the next section, and everything that gets pulled from that section gets put in this pile, right? That's not how it worked.
We created our own grids, so we didn't have 3-foot by 3-foot grids. We just created our own grids that we showed on the map.
Right.
And then we sifted things from different grids.
Okay.
So what we collected from one grid was collected out of that grid. So we did keep track of what came from one grid and then collected that as evidence.
And where did those, like there were in the fire pit area, there were 4 grid areas, right?
There was four or five. I'd have to look at our chart.
Four or five. Okay. So the fire circle itself, was that one grid?
Yes.
Okay. And anything outside of the fire circle, there was a box or some sort of a, not necessarily a square, but some sort of a, an angular area, right?
There were grids outside of the fire pit, and the fire pit was one grid.
Okay. And everything that you collected inside the fire pit went to a specific area?
Correct.
To a specific blue tarp?
That went to a sifting area and was sifted.
Okay. And the other areas within that fire pit area that had other grid areas, were they sifted in a different spot or in the same spot?
I'd have to check with our team members. I don't know if we sifted the other areas.
Okay. So you definitely sifted the fire ring.
Correct.
But you're not sure if you sifted anything outside of the fire ring.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to ask the other team members if we sifted anything from the other grids.
All right. Well, we had about 3 years to prepare for this. This didn't come up over the last 3 years?
I didn't discuss this, no.
Okay, all right. You mentioned that you were the, let me get it right here. Currently the team leader of the ERT, is that right?
Senior team leader for the evidence response team.
Senior team leader. And is that like the highest up you can go? Like everybody answers to you?
I'm over all of the evidence response team members in Utah, Idaho, and Montana.
Okay. So in your region, you're the senior team leader for
Correct.
The ERT. Okay.
Correct.
But there are other regions and they have senior team leaders as well?
Correct.
All right. And have you, on this particular case, met with any of those other senior team leaders in other areas of the country?
No.
Okay.
I have, in preparation for this search warrant, I did discuss this case with the evidence response team unit. And they oversee, they're based out of Quantico, Fredericksburg, Virginia, and they oversee all of the evidence response teams nationwide.
Okay, so the evidence response team, or the evidence response unit, oversees the evidence response teams.
Correct.
Okay, that's kind of where I was going with that.
Okay.
Thank you, that's all I have.
All right. Any redirect from the state?
No, Your Honor.
All right, that'll conclude the testimony then of this agent. If I'll inquire of the state, is he going to be recalled potentially or can he be released from any subpoena?
Your Honor, we believe we're done with Mr. Daniels, but just as out of a precaution, we would not ask to release him from a subpoena at this time.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
It was FBI Special Agent Steve Daniels testifying in the trial of Lori Vallow-Daybell. We have more coverage for you, of course, full courtroom audio as we get it for you. Insights, interviews, and discussion. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of it wherever you're downloading podcasts. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.